Molly Brodack is a poet based here in Atlanta, but her latest literary work is a memoir about her dad. It's fittingly called Bandit because in 1994, her dad went on a bank robbing spree that landed him in prison. And when he got out, he went back to robbing banks. Now he's in prison again. In Bandit, Molly Brodack digests her own feelings about her dad and attempts to understand him, both as a boy born in a refugee camp for survivors of the Holocaust, who grew up in poverty in the United States and served in Vietnam, and also as a sociopathic adult with a gambling addiction. Molly doesn't call Bandit a story. For her, storytelling is too neat and dishonest. Brodack spoke with City Lights producer Gabby Watts.
In the memoir, you talk a lot about your issues with storytelling. Do you consider this memoir a story, or were you intentional? Were there things that you did intentionally to avoid making it a traditional story?
I did intentionally avoid making it a traditional story. I've been reading a lot of memoir when I started to write this, and I saw all the moves, you know, the narrative arcs and the development of characters, just like you would do with a novel. I consciously wanted to resist that. I don't believe that presenting one's life in that kind of narrative format that you would build for a novel is genuine, because I think there's so many corners that have to be cut to make a normal, regular life fit that kind of structure. And to me, that wasn't an interesting project. It would seem more interesting to me to be able to just say the hard parts and not cut corners.
And I think it's also, you know, there's no morals or lessons. In some parts, that's kind of frustrating in the book, because you can come to some conclusion, but then later you realize there's maybe a different conclusion. And then you bring up this idea of nothing, and, you know, you ask questions and you learn nothing from them. But do you find, were there any lessons that anyone could take away from this memoir?
That's the lesson, right? That that those sort of tidy morals and sort of very conclusive lessons at the end, you know, of novels or books are in a way betrayals of the real messiness of life, and that they're sort of pleasant band-aids. And I think one of the reasons why we like them, but they don't last, and they don't really have anything more to teach us that is missing from real life, which I think is about inconclusiveness and about contradictions and mysteries that don't have answers, and that those things alone can be appreciated. Just sort of like being comfortable not knowing, and being comfortable with blankness and the emptiness that you sometimes feel in trying to get to know people, especially people that you feel you should know, like family members. That's the lesson, you know, and that helped me. I'm really glad I wrote this book, because I feel like I came to at least that kind of resting place with my own thoughts about this family life that I had.
You know, as an outsider from your life and reading this memoir, there's many points throughout where, you know, you just sort of think, oh, why would you ever talk to this guy again? Why would you ever want to see him again? But when it gets to his second arrest, you did write a testimonial for him. So do you think that anyone can be truly written off as one thing or another?
I guess the book is a testimony to the idea that no, you can't write someone off for being good or evil in a way. And so, for example, when I now am talking about the book and sort of having to say, or having people say to me, you know, your dad's a bank robber, you know, this book is about your dad being a bank robber, and the first thought I usually think is like, yes, but that's not all he is, you know, and it's kind of reductive to just say, like, to label someone by the worst thing they've ever done. I think we would all feel resistant to that kind of labeling. And yeah, his level of criminality is way beyond the average person, so I get that. But at the same time, like, knowing him closely and living with him, I saw all these other sides of him, and I know that it's impossible to to reduce him to that label. He's really complex, like I believe everyone is.
So is the title meant to be ironic?
Yeah, it's a little ironic, and I have to admit, I also try in many ways to implicate myself throughout the book because I think that's fair. And so I talk about my shoplifting period that I did in college, and I actually start the book with a scene where I stole a pamphlet of baby names from the checkout line at the grocery because I wanted to show that, you know, like I'm not a hero and he's not a villain, and we all have this sort of range of experiences of good and bad. And so in a way, like I look at that title and I think just as much about him as about me, in the sense that I'm also part of his story and I don't know him very well. And a lot of the facts and information I feel in a way I had to kind of steal out of him or find in the family. And so, yeah, it also kind of describes the process of discovery for me.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question of memory is so unreliable. So what were some of the resources that you had to depend on to write the memoir?
Luckily, I kept some diaries when I was really young. I had some journals that I wrote in starting when I was like in second grade, and then I kept writing a diary up through high school. So I actually had a lot of stuff to look through when I started writing. And some of the things that I wrote, now looking back, I can really see them with much more clarity about what I was really going through or feeling. I remember kind of feeling like our family was somewhat normal because, you know, you're normal within your frame of reference, and I felt like this is a normal family. But now looking back and seeing like some of the diary pages I mentioned in the book when I was really young, like second grade, I wrote about getting a new pair of shoes and how exciting that was. And I didn't really realize that we were not rich, and like the excitement over having like two pairs of shoes was something I wrote about. Or later, just like I remember I wrote about making up a story, having to go to therapy as a kid and making up a story for the therapist about a happy memory. She asked me to like talk about a happy memory of your family, and I couldn't think of one. So I made up a story about us caroling at Christmas time. And at the time, it was just like, I just wanted to give this person an answer and get them out of my face. But now looking back, it's like, wow, that has so much more impact on me as an adult. And I felt a lot of pity for that girl living in that situation and how hard it must have been to be that age.
Yeah, yet at the same time, throughout the memoir, you also talk about how relative to other people's pain, maybe your pain is, it's less than other pain. You know, other people have it a lot worse off than you. And, you know, there's even the part where you're describing your brain tumor that you had, and you're saying, you know, other people have it much worse off than I do. But it's like you have a bank robber dad and a brain tumor. So that does, you know, sound pretty bad. Could you talk about that thought process about justifying writing about your pain and comparing your pain to other people?
Mm-hmm. That is a very tricky topic. On one hand, I know, and I've been told by therapists, and my mom is a therapist, and she always said this too, that it's not productive to rate or compare trauma, that everyone's trauma and pain is valid in their life. So to say experience is better or worse, for you, that can sort of set up feelings of guilt or shame about your pain compared to other people, and that's not very healthy. But on the other hand, I do want to be practical about it and say, of course, there are other children who had it way worse, you know, that were living in, you know, situations of war or intense abuse. I do struggle with some of that sense of guilt about speaking out about this story. In fact, there's a scene in the book when I first decided to write something about my life, and in this very direct way in one of my workshop classes when I was a graduate student. And I got the exact response that I feared. One of the students in the workshop class said, well, you know, this is interestingly written and blah, 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 but it's kind of a pity party. Like, it's just, you know, feel sorry for me. And that was the exact thing that I didn't want to think I was doing. I didn't want to seem like I was trying to elicit pity or that I felt bad for myself at all, but that I just had all this stuff I needed to say, and this is my particular story. And so that shut me down for a while, and that's why it took me a long time to actually write this book. That was, you know, 10 years ago, and now I'm finally starting to deal with it again. So yeah, that fear is real, to fear that you're not, your story's not valuable, you know.
Have your mom and sister and your dad, do you know, have they read the book?
My mom and my sister have read it. They were reading some of the earlier drafts because I needed their approval on it, and I wanted to make sure that they were being represented in the way that they approved of. My dad, he's still in prison right now, and I don't think he has read the book. He knows about it. I had to tell him about it for legal reasons. But I don't know if he will read the book. I would imagine if I was him, I would want to, you know, but he hasn't told me. I don't know if that has happened or if it will happen, and I'm not sure what his reaction would be. I don't think he would like it because it reveals everything that he tried to hide in the family. So I imagine that would be unpleasant for him, but maybe not. Maybe he's matured, and maybe he would see it as vindicating in a way for me to be able to talk about all of these things. I don't know.
Molly Brodak, thank you so much for coming in and talking about Bandit.
Thank you.